Well, what an evening, huh? What an evening. Some great, great poetry there. This is Father and Son. To vape or not to vape. To say yes or no, to stay or to go. To rape when the answer coming is too slow or ends up as no. Or to swallow your ego and let her go. STDs or condom, please. Unprotected sex in the back of a car. Herpes can leave a very nasty, nasty scar. A trip to the pharmacy for a pregnancy test. Your fingers crossed, your mind in a mess. To drink and drive, being foolish and brash. Did you hear that he crashed? So what time are you going up to the church? I'm just going to watch him pass in the back of the hearse. To make your mother laugh or cry, did you think of that choice before you died? Youth is a gift that's only given once. It's made not to last, like a brown paper bag or in the wind smoking a fag or a rotten banana thrown in the trash. Youth at its best is respected, protected, and never ever neglected. It is capable of the most wonderful things and can cause you pain like your first bee sting. Happy and sad, it can be good or bad. It is strong yet frail. If you take a wrong turn, you could end up in jail. Your parents are there until they are not. You in your room would rather listen to PlayStation or curse at Xbox. It is up to you to put the icing on the cake with one hand or two. It can begin as early as tying your shoe. Life is a matter of choice, so choose wisely. In the end, it is up to you. Make few mistakes, infrequent and new. Don't let youth get in the way of your health, your happiness, your ability to pay. The book is called Life. The first chapter is youth. Every day that passes is like turning a new page. A happy ending ends in old age.
Thank you. Thank you, David. Antonio, next, please.
Hi, congratulations again for the beautiful guest. Poets, really inspiring tonight. My poem is called The End of the World and is inspired by the recent travel that I did this summer in Portugal. It's called The End of the World because it's in it's related to Cabo São Vicente, which is the extreme margin of the European continent, where once on a time many centuries ago was considered to be the end of the world. The rays of the sun rest on the limestone rocks. The wind is concrete. The cliff smile to the trustworthy seagull. Kiss me again, my tender summer. The naked body of the sea burns on a tribal dense hemispheres of cobalt blue. At the end of the world, sailors are drunken angels on ships of clouds. Erotic knowledge that pushes the body to break its chest, to reveal an ocean deep as an art, repeating the sound of the clash of the sea waves against the cliff of limestone rocks. The wind bites the sweet ice, the horizon, sky, and sea become one unique shape. The surfing boards are sold by locals, riding up the waves to reach the nirvana. In that endless blue, it is necessary to disappear. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Can we have Catherine Rowan next, please?
First of all, I want to give a plug for Pros and Rows. Tuesday 24th, come see myself, JJ Ethan, Quigley and Jimmy O'Shea. Woo! What a fantastic evening. I've been watching Massimo for a long time now, and tonight I get to meet Massimo in the flesh. Woo! Now my good friend Paul McMahon is down there at the end of the bar, and what wasn't said earlier is that he's also a fantastic musician. So when choosing my poem for tonight, Paul McMahon has put this poem of mine to music. So this is dedicated to Paul. It's called Feast. I feel your loss suddenly at dinner with friends in a seafood restaurant. It comes in like an overtight stitch, just between my last two ribs. My back is split and lungs displayed. I must be silent on the way to Valhalla to meet you in the great hall of my desire. Your absence spells torture in my crow eye. Salt thickens stinging skin of mistake. Fret of your wave leaves your indent on my thinly papered stone walls. Return, I cannot feast without you. Return, I cannot feast without you. Return, I cannot feast without you.
Nice, nice, nice. Can we have Roxanne, please?
So I didn't choose that, but it happens that this poem is the follow-up of the five-word challenge. It's in French, because it's been a while. And it's for a friend that I went to visit in Brittany just after my brother's wedding. And 14 years of friendship. It's a long time. Fille de la mer, toi du nord, moi plus au sud du nez au temps gris. Il n'était pas écrit de se connaître dans notre propre pays. C'est bien l'eau pourtant qui fut notre point de chute. Dans un coin de terre homologue que rien ne rebute. L'eau sortie de terre, revitalisante, pour des jeunes en quête d'entente. Une discussion, une autre, et on ne se lâche plus. La corogne résonne de français dans ses rues. Chacune s'évade, avance, reprend le large, et c'est chez Shakespeare que concordent nos barges. Plusieurs week-ends, la même complicité. Bientôt 14 ans que dure notre amitié. Allez, viens, tu auras besoin de repos. Un appel aura suffi et je t'ai prise au mot. 3 jours entre nous, au calme, à faire le point et savoir qu'entre nous, ce n'est jamais trop long. Thank you very much. And so she has read it because I sent it to her after we met, and because this event is recorded and she's not able to watch it tonight, but she's She's in the last stretch of her gestation. And if you could give her a super cheer, that way I can send her the link after tonight. So if you can give her a big cheer, thank you so much.
Merci. Thank you. Can we go? How was that? Can we have Mona Lynch, please? Yeah. Mona Lynch.
Fantastic, fantastic night. It was great to be here. And this is a two-stanza poem, slightly biographical. It's about life before I discovered all of this at age 75. That's true. I made my way into UCC at 75 to do the MA. I came here, poets that they invite, and hadn't a clue of what I was at. Anyway, this is Persephone. My feet are a riot of protesting pain. Time to slow down, rest, redundant, remote. Yet a tune rising like smoke from an old violin can stir a churn full of memories. I whir fast backward through the years. Childhood, a potpourri of learning to survive, shackles, struggles, yet find resilience to be resourceful from a mother, a beacon, a lighthouse. Teens, a maze, finding my unicursal path. 20s, marriage, babies, entering the queendom of motherhood, a seesaw of new coping skills. Guided by the gut, trusting blindly, watching children and seasons change too rapidly, and letting go. Then, courage flickers to life, embers seeking a breath, bring flames of hope. A new day has dawned. I am on a campus. My own spot in the library, learning Chekhov, Joyce, Yeats, Persephone, Hades. I nod in the quad to my grandchildren with their bulging backpacks hanging. This is their rightful place. I am an anomaly, but I make the grade because starved, thirsty, I slurp it up like cider in the Abbey Tavern. I send submissions, fake academic critiques, follow the class up and down the hills of Beira to study the hag, ignore the protest of my new hip, my life enhanced by taking the road less traveled. I know I hold a treasury which youth has yet to discover. They must stop, smell the rain, feel the wind, be the change they wish to see in this world.
That was a great story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. So glad you're among us. So agree with that, Rosalind. Thank you for being with us. Can we have JJF next, please?
These days, the epiphanies have been hitting me swiftly, so much so that something has shifted within me. And I could be like, it's all whatever, whatever, whatever. Cause I've never been better. I'm the oh so clever unfetter man of letters who finally got it together. But I could never get it together while we were together. So I think I'll think about that forever. Cause I've stayed up late trying to pick it all apart amidst all the half measures and false starts. And I'm finding there's not an inch of thin skin left. It's all scars. But every time our eyes met, it was all sparks. But lately, we're so far apart that my safeguard has been to make art, create art, debate art, break art, rip apart art with sharp art shards settling into my soft and my hard parts. So I inspect art until I feel my stress and regret part. And I ingest art, stuffed till stretch marks, seeing the lines that stress marks. So how do I start to bring it to a close so I don't continue to miss you? It's like you've settled into my heart and my bones, speaking through my sinews and tissue. And I suppose I'm just composed of striated muscle, the last of my jangled nerves and whole rolls of adipose. Cause I'm pushing 40 years old with so many slivers of silver, but only a few gold goals.
Nice one, Jason. Okay, Rob, next, please. There he is. Oh, he's disappearing us. Sorry for you.
True story. I shit you not. I was in the pub one night, right? And this guy told me the story, right? And I wrote a poem about it, right? And it was also one of these times, now I'm in a room full of poets. So you must have had this thing where people say, oh, you're a poet, write a poem about this. So I fucking did. Also, another bit of context for this poem is, I've been working down in Cove, in this big old house, which is right next to the cathedrals. It's on the same kind of terrace as the cathedral. And it used to be, according to my sources, the Rear Admiral in charge of the Port of Cork, who's a British fucking naval officer at the time. No? Anyway, I was down there working away one day and the old fellas came round and they were all chatting about it and I said, oh, I wrote a poem about Cove, because this dude asked me to fucking 20-odd years ago. Here's the poem. Another bit of context. When you came down the road from Dublin and you were driving into Cork 20-odd years ago, there used to be a sign on the side of the road that said, Cork, a nuclear-free port. Do you remember that? Do you remember that? Yeah.
See that.
It's not there anymore. Anyway, this is not a fucking stand-up comedian gig. This is serious poetry, right? So, geography is not my strong point. Right? Remember that. That's important. Nuclear-free Cork? Now there's a laugh. I met your man in the pub and he showed me the photographs. It seems in the early 90s, they imported some scrap, offloaded at Hall Boland for the lads doing Irish Steel. This was pre-ISPAT. So the lads took the scrap and he put it through the plant and he turned it into shiny new girders to satisfy the German demand. And then the lads took the girders and he put them on a ship and he sent them off to Germany. It might have been Brest-Litovsk or maybe Hajdú-Split. As I said before, geography is not my strong point. So anyway, the lads washed their hands and they thought, job well done, so imagine their consternation when the girders were returned. It seems like the girders were well beyond the pale because the Germans' Geiger counter ran right up off the scale. So what was the story? What was the score? The lads were really angry. It was very nearly war, but there was one book on there. A good old friend of mine, the guy who asked me to read the poem, who read them out an article over from the London Times. It seems the bright sparks at Sellafield had knocked some buildings down, and he didn't want all that radioactive scrap left lying around. So who was responsible? Who was to blame? The management washed their hands of it. Sellafield did the same. Leukemia and cancer cut way short, lads, and nobody seemed to give a fuck. So it's really very sad. And there's many a moonless, cloudless night when the harbour seems to glow and nobody knows the source of it, but it's not from the streetlights of Cove.
Nice and right. I know more about that sign. Where is it gone? Okay, Cahill next, please.
Yo, how are we? If you excuse me while I fiddle with my props for a second here. Any moment, they glow, apparently. I didn't know I did that when I bought it. Ah, yeah. There we go. All right. My 3 minutes winding down, is it?
You're right.
Thanks, Phil. All right, so as some of you know, I've been mucking around with hip hop a bit lately. The last couple of years I've been dabbling. I don't think I brought it down here properly yet, so here is a demo. It's called Neuromancer.
In a state of meditation, beneath a Joshua tree in an alternate dimension, a bent form of energy, cycling realities. I am in the spice trance, assembling new tryptamines. In the holiest of holies, I'll be feeding the rats until the ceiling retracts and the temple collapse. It's non-dual, no we but only people and paths. Soul retrieval in the deepest of black, ritual magic. See me breathing chupacabras like it's acupuncture for the planet. And minotaurs and other group of ratches, a crack from the crotch, freshly unbacking patches. An animal shaman examining twitching limbic phantoms. Neurotic neuromancer burning candles in a ramshackle medicine mansion. With my sigils hacked in, Bellaman lambskin, and the blackened backs of burnt napkins. Manifestos and annals, so casually channeled. This animist cookbook, one left hook, you get left on a flesh hook. Your delirious fearing to sleep, here is the gear of the beast. Weary of hearing the bleating of sheep, we're here to shear meat from the fleece. Now, down a carpet of stars, velvet and dark, the goddess comes to draw a card. Behold, she holds the queen of hearts. But it's another purple evening in the people's bazaar. If you look hungry, you'll starve.
I haven't figured out what to do with myself during this bit. So we're all going to listen to this. This is David Copperhead, no piss and venom fed. In the land of soap and money, smoking out another mouthful of that killer bee honey. Chew another handful of alphabet amphetamines, absolute zero plume energy. Spew a few fluid eulogies, mouthful of piranha breath. A symptom of the druidry is trying to lead samsara less. All glowing flocks, but blowing flocks, flowing locks, not a bowing or an albatross. The trick is to look a little knowing and a little lost. I am the earth, I am the plough, I am a pet bottle and a bow. My face keeps melting into crowds, and there's a smoke where the dervishes, sand skirts and perfume, melt rat, manta rays and mantises, anthills and Atlantises. And you can call a Christ-like figure as you plumb it in slow motion, just another raindrop to the ocean. You are tuned into the shadows, strapped atop of the mast. A word spreads fast, and every word you're saying is gas, gas, gas. Thank you.
That was slick. Did we say slick? Slick, right. That was great, Carl. That was really cool. Fair play, fair play. Can we have May, Janet, please? Janet? May, yes. Come up here. Hello.
Go for it.
Am I just tall?
Maybe a little shorter, but there we go.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. I haven't been here in a while. I've been having some health issues, I suppose. Nothing major, we think, hopefully. But it's not my first time. I've been sick. Back in 2019, I had some issues. And that actually turned out to be something quite minor, but affected me majorly. And having gone through that has kind of given me hope now that while I'm going through whatever, that it's probably something so small, you know? But so in kind of, yeah, just kind of pay homage to that, I have a poem here about how tough it was, and it's kind of helps me be like, it's not that bad now, because I feel mostly fine, you know? So this one is called Sick. Wow, I know, original. My eyes open. My makeshift curtain hangs awkwardly, introducing light in a panoply. Silence breathes through the house, and I breathe and breathe and breathe. My heart, not just in spirituality or emotionality, but in physicality, pants and heaves and beats and bangs, but my curtain, unmoved, still hangs. I need to use the bathroom, but for a small room, that's a lot of room to cross. I lie there, nausea greets me like an old friend, but I just want the friendship to end. It doesn't. The bathroom. I force myself to sit, breathing heavy so my lungs were hit, not really sure how I'm handling it. Bathroom. My naked feet meet the floor. Soft wood would feel rough, but everything is just a bit too tough. My mind does not lie on the temperature of the room, or shrouded with a thoughtful stare, just empty eyes and stagnant air. No, my mind does not go to basic things like how much sleep I got last night, not even focused on sight. But now that I mention it, at least my sight is right and the room isn't spinning. I listen to the raggedy beat of rigid breath upon breath and wondering, am I feeling death, slowly slipping me into its nest? But as soon as I take a step, these legs, which bear the weight, quiver and shake and sedate, and my feet trudge like a troll to the bathroom. I made it. The white wood weathered door frame is all too familiar with this game. Finally, I feel a chill of my surroundings against my forehead as I lean and consider going back to bed. But I haven't finished my trip to the bathroom. Two awkward steps proceed, my legs barely heed, my lungs still need, my heart still seeds. Sadness. I somehow make it back to bed. The relief is not of joy or relaxation, but of mental frustration and physical concentration, taking a break. I lay there seething in silence, cursing the silence, wishing the sickness that plagues me would be nice enough to tell me why it berates me and why it hates me. Thinking of all the things I want to do and all the things I cannot do and all the things I might never do. As my breathing takes a break because my diaphragm is tired, I laugh and I feel the tissue around my lungs expand. And I wonder, when did it get so out of hand that even a secondary command, a thoughtless reaction like laughing, I could feel expanding contraction, and how tiring was such an action. I continued to lay there, and I do not move because everyone is tired. And I am tired, my body begins to slow, as if I am asleep, and I wonder if eternal sleep greets you this way. When my mind is clear, when I'm prepared, I am not going anywhere. Oh, that's what I tell myself. Have to tell myself, always telling myself, protecting myself from myself. Because what people fail to realize is that every action to compromise feed the lies that I am okay. And the mental burden of pretending by presenting is also tired. I am tired, and I'm waiting for the day that I wake up again. And I did, so hey!
Thank you very much, Mary.
Lauren O'Donovan.
For context, I have a small girl who's 7, but I've been having an awful time giving her a little brother or a sister. So, made possible by Cork County Arts, I've been working on a series of poems talking about secondary infertility and tracking my month-by-month progress through IVF. And this one, I'll bring you back to April. This one's called April. The small girl declares she no longer likes Easter because she's afraid of zombies. I remind her in our house, we celebrate life and to always avoid direct eye contact with undead gods. After the first grass cut of the year, starlings peck step around the garden, their shivering wings an iridescent spectrum of irrelevant colors, where each feather is equally honest. Early daffodil trumpets have withered limp and brown, incubating impossible seeds. What is the point of all those loud flowers when bulbs reproduce in the wet, dark, starless soil? The ultrasound screen sloshes with circles of black. A void that means presence, not absence. A sweet, fat egg, but on the wrong side. That fallopian tube was cut out to be a coffin for a coffee bean-sized baby. Another month, another cancellation, more hormones mean I'll be heavy with void eggs, a rare featherless chicken making Vanta Black omelets. The universe may not be locally real, but my reality is local. Crying is not an emergency, a funfair sign informs me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Pam next from Zoom. Pam, are you ready?
Yeah.
Awesome. Give a round of applause.
Thank you. Kinship. I shiver and shake, veiled between worlds, pale yet not fallen. Still, I am tired. Tempted to give up, to give in. But my birth tree, Rowan, leaves feathered from eagle, owl, and vulture, sees hope in darkness, sheds blood-red buried protection. My found tree, black walnut, brooding furrowed sustenance, taproots me deep, readies me to break with the past. My wishing tree, beech, threads the graying darkness, curls around voice, once thought lost forever, whisper sing speech. My drawn trees, poplar and aspen, burn kinship. We are your resistance. We are your shield. We are your words, rising from the ashes, inking into being. Thank you.
Beautiful imagery, Pam. Thank you very much. Can we have Alexandra next, please?
Just a little backstory to this poem. So over the summer, I went to Canada for holidays. And then after that, I went to Hungary. Every year I go to Hungary visiting family and things like that. And I was actually very excited to go to Hungary because I love seeing my family and stuff, but it just didn't really go the way I wanted it to for many different reasons. And I was a bit disappointed by the end of the summer. So all I wanted to do is just come back to Ireland, to be honest. So this is kind of like a poem describing like the troubles and like what I was kind of feeling. And I actually felt pretty calm after writing this poem. It was like, I felt at peace after it. So this poem is called The Prey and the Hunters. Trapped yet again, but unlike before, where she was a mental entrapment, I am now physically trapped. This was not how it was supposed to be like. I was meant to feel enlightenment, leaving all my worries behind. I was meant to pause all my problems, ones that have been chasing me. I can't escape it. My problems were the hunters, and I felt like the prey. And I, the prey, escaped the hunters from hundreds of miles away. I thought the prey was too far in distance from the hunters, but I was wrong. I'm now the prey to both new and reoccurring problems. The hunters don't seem to rest, not until they trap their prey and keep their mind in agony. I can't escape it. Escape the vision of one's intoxication. Where before I could escape and leave their environment, I am now in closer vision and leaving is impossible. I see it and it breaks me. Where their dear family blame us on tiredness and work, I warn them of the truth. But either they don't want to hear my words or they don't realize the depth of their intoxication, their addiction. I can't escape it, neither here nor there. I can't escape it. The different minds here working with dissimilar logic, disputes here and there. I had enough of this. I hear it enough there. Here is just a repetition, with more individuals to add the spark to the flames. I avoid, I walk away. That's the only thing I can do here. I am trapped for now, no longer filled with independency like hundreds of miles away, no longer with the same wings of freedom to escape. No longer with those bright souls who pull me back from this entrapped feeling. It's like I'm counting down the days till I return. I love and miss this place, but it's no longer the same. The older I am, the more I see. And the more I see the once invisible cracks. In the end, the prey will always be trapped by the hunters. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Can we have Rosalind Blue next?
Thank you. Thanks very much. How to follow that? I'm back from a festival, like I said earlier, so I grabbed something that smiled at me and said, I want to be pulled out and aired a bit. So this is called Blackout Moon. The orange moon shimmering behind dimming clouds, pushing past in heaving droves. On land and sea, the night goes wild. The storm is chasing life and light. And with a bang, the moon goes out. In the darkness of this blackout, at the bottom of the ocean, gather casts of wild crustaceans, lobsters, spider crabs and shrimps, clickety-clack in marching motion, shoving forward, upward, out. While above, deep in the outback, in the blackout of the moon, through the parched and dry savannah, quietly bounds in sleepy mood, with dreams of oranges and flowers, the big-eyed friendly kangaroo. And the tiger in the jungle sees the orange blackout moon and wants to follow the saltations of the friendly kangaroo.
as he's dreaming of crustaceans in the floods of the monsoon. So what's the moral of this story? See, the blackout of the moon lures out all the varied creatures, marching, dreaming, hunting, wild, like the storm is chasing life, moving forward from the darkness, climbing upward to the light, searching safety, finding light. And this was a 5-word poem. And I won't tell you the 5 words.
That's over there. We have Ben Thompson next, please.
About 20 years ago, a little bit more than 20 years ago, I wrote a poem about soldiers. And I thought for a long time about what to call it, and I finally called it Soldiers. Well, 2 years ago, I wrote another poem about soldiers, and I had a long think about what to call that. Being a man of profound imagination and infinite fantasy, I decided to call it Soldiers 2. So this is Soldiers 2. Because they inch slowly towards their deaths, they are slightly, slightly, so very slightly less innocent than you. You who, sitting in a pushchair in Kiev, felt the petals of awakening life fly off the stem. You who, serving cocktails above the Donbass, found the cabin gone and yourself grasping at air. You who, nodding on the autobahn, braked sideways into flashing headlamps and a screaming horn. Oh yes, they are only slightly, slightly, slightly less innocent than you, because they are pushed inch by inch, trembling, praying in metal boxes about to be filled with flame, in grey fatigue through fields draped with bones, in metal birds ripe to be blown from the sky, mumbling, sweating, clutching a photo of a girl in Moscow or Kiev, a letter, a lucky rabbit's foot. Yes, in whatever manner of coffin we have decided to launch them to do battle on the ocean of our raging discontents, they are only slightly, slightly, so very slightly less innocent than us. Yes, slightly, 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 but so very slightly that all the sunlit uplands of our righteous innocence can never atone for their pain. And Dostoevsky spoke the truth. Nothing is more foul than that one should decide the hour in which another is slain.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Ben. Can we have Cedric next, please? Cedric.
So many people on the open mic didn't think it would come so quick. This one is inspired of a true story. It's called An Interlude Before the Bruises. A finger on the glass's rim whistles through the voices of countless conversation, a sharp fuchsia, which, like an orchestra, is tuning them against each other and the atmosphere of these drifting theater moment. The whistle steadily whittles down the chaos, regulates the movement of the sea of heads until the foam settles into a surface of blinking white bubbles. What was in shaded noise is now the pregnant darkness of silence. The whistles die. A tongue clicks, claps, waves and weaves, invisible director stirring tensions in the attendance, leading pupils into mores, amid synchronized auger sighs. Chuckle. Cough fireworks. The masterfully peppered staccatos signify the coming of the intense envoi. The joy of a speech, finally of jokes and puns in full bloom, that burst of laughters could only accompany. The whistling glass raised scatters an aurora of lights onto all faces, sparkling blessing onto a cheering crowd, only to unfortunately exit through the fingers. The colorless clatter is met with winded screams and cackles. The spilled red ends this interlude. Hughes the wildest wedding night.
Awesome. Thank you. Can we have Alicia next, please?
Thank you. So I have some disclaimers for this one. I'll get to them later, actually. So I like that these events have really inspired me to share honestly. I've never regretted it so far, but I think I might after this, so we'll see. And before I get to the disclaimers, so this poem is about two of my main struggles in life that people might feel. Dating, very hard, I think you can agree, and finding a good therapist. So I thought I'd put them both in one and create one poem, you know, two birds, one stone. And the disclaimer is I have no judgment towards people who shop in Dunn's. That's fine. And I have no judgment towards women who have never kissed a girl. That's also fine. Your art doesn't actually reflect your values. You know, it's all just satire. So this is called A First Date with My Therapist.
Okay.
You greet me in the non-place, right here where people don't make eye contact, where we stare at our phones obediently, where we act as if no one ever let us know the careful truth. Mental illness isn't contagious, that even if we kissed, it wouldn't rub off. Even if our bodies touched skin on skin, it wouldn't leave a stain. The infection only starts happening later on, but not at the first tingle. But when I'm the only one you text when you're tired and afraid, when we become vital ventilators, oxygen pumps, allowing those poor pulmonary pieces to keep on grinding on. But this blonde lady in this white room has been warned. She is in the know. She meets my eye. I'm not afraid of her because she's separate. She has nothing to smear over me. Her life can't touch me in this room. And even if she lets a little scrap of her slip out, there are tissues just in case. Before she ever speaks a word, I appraise her and I let the judgment begin. She shops in Dunn's. She has never stepped foot in a vintage store. She uses the Snapchat dog filter. She has never kissed a girl. She has never even thought about it. She loves easy reads in Mallorca once a year. She takes brunch with the girls from school once a month and can't admit she hates them all. She can't admit that the systems are the problem. And she leads me in, pronouncing my name, question mark, did I get that right? Where's that from? Matter of fact, I nod. And the space shifts to suit her, and I shift to suit her. 3 minutes in, I know I'm on a first date. The signs are all there. An old familiar tale, an old familiar state, I do not set the tone. Gentle adrenaline tinged with nausea, I know how this will go. My mind begins to blur, blurting out the same old anecdotes, the familiar tales. What my mom is like, why my dad is the way he is. The generations of aching that I'm trying to absolve and soothe, mirroring her language to make sure she understands. I use the word mom. Never called my mother that in my life. It's just the word she used. I avoid the word ancestors like the plague. I tell her what I do for work, and I use words I think she'll understand. I leave the poetry behind. despite the fact it presents me in a clearer light, knows me better than the clipped words I choose for her ever could. She doesn't tell me to slow down. She doesn't ask me what my favorite cereal is. She doesn't ask me about God. Although I've said the word three times, she doesn't use any adjectives at all. I can't express how I feel life to her. As I look in her gray-blue ocean stare, I can't let it trickle how things are juicy or caustic or zingy, how experiences make me feel fizzy or like my bones are dry or like my body is made of melted chocolate. I need her to know how important it is to me, that special moment. The one where I realized four potato waffles on their side in the pack match perfectly with one laid flat, perpendicular to the rest. This means I can have three, leave one in the box, and it stays perfectly square. I leave that fact in the freezer. I can't tell her that this made my day. And she doesn't ask about sex, even though sex is core and vital. If we could just admit we think about it at least once a day. Along with food and sleep, it chases us so that we think of the nape of their neck as we read the news, the soft rolls of their belly as we go for a pee in Tesco, the suggestion of their daring gaze as we sit on Dublin bus. She doesn't want to know. She's never kissed a girl, I can tell. It's not her fault, but I wish she knew what it felt like, and I wish she cared. I wish she asked. But we chat and I gesticulate until I have no concept of time, and before long her questions make no sense because I don't trust her to hold the silence, so I fill the void instead with anecdotes and outdated findings and words she'll understand. She tells me things take time and I nod, and I tell her she's so right, so true, girl, they really do. I tell her I've never heard of internal family systems or delayed gratification or the fact that we choose a familiar hell over an unfamiliar heaven. I speak to her in a way I think she'll understand. I fold and I fold and I fold and origami and paper cuts until I'm small enough to fit in her pocket. She could take me home with her in her silver Honda Civic. I could fall asleep on the drive. So as first dates go, it's fairly standard, and thankfully there's no obligatory kiss at the door. And instead of faking fighting about who pays for drinks, I know I've prepaid online. No need to fake it again. I step outside that threshold and come to terms with the fact that I won't listen to my gut. I'll ignore every vibration and listen to the damp logic that says, it's important to give people a second chance. Maybe she was nervous. Maybe I was too. I'll probably see her again next week.
Cool. Can we have Kieran McCurtain up next, please? Nice one, Alicia. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And thanks a lot, everyone. It's been a real pleasure to hear you tonight. Thank you to the guitarist.
Is that Ian Lapis here, right?
Not getting paid enough. Go play your fucking golf, you fat fuckers, and suckle from the teat of your genocidal campaign. Go play your fucking golf, you fat fucks, and bathe your hands in oil as you gaze over the fairway of your well-manicured Florida landscape. Wipe them on the sleeve of your pink synthetics. Rub the knees of your pressed cotton pants. Fine dyes from the Near East. Sweaty. How close it is to you, really. Persecutingly sweaty. Sweaty. As in how the skin gets as the sun gets high in the middle of the day. The way it makes the flesh smell. Go eat your warm home-baked apple pie. Sweet, isn't it? sweet, thick cream. The kind that holds its shape as you throw it at the wall. How the splatter casts a shadow on the paint. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Could we have Suzanne next, please?
Okay, so this poem is dedicated to my great auntie who passed away 5 years ago. So she was the daughter of a survivor of a tsunami that we had in Europe in 120 years ago between Sicily and Italy. And my great grandmother, when she inherited so much that she decided her daughter were going to get educated. So she was the first poet I met because she used to tell me a lot of stories about Ulysses. Where she was living between Italy and Sicily, where Ulysses had to cross the street to get into the death world. So the landscape has the names of the characters and the places and the monsters of the Odyssey. So it's called Summer Afternoons. My childhood is a small triangle of light, an enclosed wild garden where the nettle is high, and the Judas tree looks back at you. I do not remember how many steps I needed to crawl to my great auntie's kitchen, but I can feel the roughness of the wood under my bare feet and hands, while her voice leads me upstairs. She's the captain of my boat, the loud voice, who knows how to grow tomatoes with no water, and when to harvest grapes without touching them. Her nose is always into someone else's business, and her shirt is bright white under the red lipstick. No ring on her fingers and no safety belt while she drives. I sit on her side, pulling the foam out of the hot plastic seat of the old Renault. A new chapter of the Odyssey is unfolding from her smoky lips while driving in the dry river in the summer afternoons. The car bounces and bumps while we laugh and scream, and the apricots fall from the basket into the back seat. We lit the dirt too. The femme fatale Circe turned Ulysses into a pig after he refused their love, him and his whole crew. I see Ulysses as a tall, hairy, beardy man with a bad clothes and a sweet breath, like the fisherman we met at the beach where Ulysses faced Charybdis. A world of sirens, dark and untouched, is left unsung by the poets. Where are the women in the fairy tales when the male completes his quest? They're making fried aubergines and stuffed olives that will feast in my mouth. I lose my shoes. She buys me sandals, red little sandals. They make my feet bleed. I keep them with me in my sleep.
What a story, thank you. Can we have Chris next, please?
Just wanted to say that I'm so excited to finally see Massimo here because, my God, you are like, I mean, just insane. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. The armor of a man. They tell me hide your tears, be hard, be strong. Yet human hearts were made to break and heal. If luster's chains are loosened, can that be wrong? Am I whole because I choose to feel? They burden us with silence like a crown, to bleed in shadows, yet to stand and fight, first into danger, first to fall or drown, but last to seek a hand in the darkest night. And in that weight, our fragile edges tear. Beneath the armor, cracks begin to grow. Is strength in bearing more than what we can bear, or does true courage lie in letting go? So I will stand, not as the world demands, but as a man, with an open heart and open hands.
Thank you.
Beautiful words, thank you for sharing that with us. Can we have Patricia next, please?
This is called Hard Return. I learned long ago never to press return at the end of a sentence unless a paragraph fights its corner despite you. First, do no harm. Pitch past pitch of grief. Those who can do, those who can criticize, biting one's lip before interrogation takes place. Eating out of turn, things not to do, in company or otherwise, a correct mistake, splinters my will, some faux pas resurrection. Press button A for connection. Losing to will to die and the strength to live, stretched out, a corpse sobbing within sight of rescue. The moves are false. You've got everything now. You cast off blame like an iron cage, hardware melting, a faulty infatuation eats me in my shirt. Pain is bearable enough to visit past intransigen, a pain to a colossal near miss, an unlucky escape, onerous as it seems, tears fighting back, losing battle of wit and wits. Burning machine chimes out to last fury. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Patricia. Can we have Mo O'Connor next, please?
Thank you very much. And I have a timer here on my watch. And if I go over to 3 minutes, I get a shock. Anyway, so this evening before I left the house, I happened to check into just watching the news, and I saw the leading story in American news channels, and it's about a guy called Tyree Hill. And he's a professional footballer who plays with the Miami Dolphins. And yesterday he was on his way to the game. He was pulled over by the cops, some traffic infraction. But lo and behold, he was handcuffed, face down on the pavement, kneeling on his back. And but his mate came along and pleaded his case. Eventually, they let him go, which means he couldn't have done anything very serious if they let him go. So after being handcuffed, he went on. He played at the Miami Dolphins and scored a touchdown. What a guy. But the real thing I'm trying to point out here is being black in America, you're still a moving target. Mm. And this poem is from 4 years ago. I wrote on the death of murder of George Floyd. And this poem is called Martin Luther King's Nightmare. Mm. I wrote it back in May, 27th of May 2020. Very short poem. Martin Luther King's Nightmare. I had a nightmare that almost 60 years later, brothers would die in the street while onlookers filmed for the nightly news. I had a nightmare that the white men who knelt to pray on a Sunday would kneel on a black man's neck on a Monday. I had a nightmare that civil rights would be discarded, blowing in the wind, just like Bobby's song. I had a nightmare that armed fascists could protest while water cannon greeted all the rest. I had a nightmare, the Civil Rights March on Washington in 1963 was only a dream.
Thanks for that message. Thank you. Can we Carol B next, please? Ah, sweet. Is that okay for you?
Yep.
Nice one.
This is called Plastic Aspirations. You can have everything you've ever dreamed of, but only when you don't want it anymore. You'll plead to be let out of your cage, so that you may sprint through your youth and forever onwards at a gallop. They will let you out, but only when you're too old to move, and too scared to leave the comforts of home. You will want to fly and soar, and see the world from above. They will make it possible. But you won't fly like a bird. You'll fly like a fish. Fish when it's dead. Packed in a can, sealed in tight. You'll fly in that can and you'll get there all right. But you won't know the feeling of a bird in flight. Thank you.
Nice play of words. We hope you join us again. We have Margaret O'Regan next now.
This is very short, as a fitting for the end of the night, and it's called Sleep. Your scent lingers. The pillow remembers. I sleep in your essence.
Margaret, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. I want to do a poem, if you don't mind. Yeah. Margaret has a lovely, lovely encapsulation of the mic, but I really want to do this one. Sorry. But it was excellent, though. Everyone was excellent tonight. Wow, what a night. What a night. What a night to MC. Whew. Anyway. I'm not going to give an introduction to this because I'm going to jump right into it. I want to see what it's like. I basically ran home yesterday going to write this because I got inspired by somebody else. I've gone to where my mind will become dust, clean slate among all the other smooth roof slates. Not this cracked tile that I've been dealt with. This intellect, a different wattage, this self missing a few bits of code at birth. I've gone to where my mind will be aborted, formatted, neutered, and completed. So they say, so they promise, so they've invented. I sit in this wheelchair, gazing at the LED lights, autistic, Asperger's, sensor observer, a selective sponge on a different wavelength. Between my chittery hands, I hold a pterosaur figure. It represents me, as pterosaur is not a dinosaur, but lived among dinosaurs. I love paleontology, especially the study of avian reptiles. Why would I want to remove all of that intake, that soaked up knowledge and that passion? I want to love, and I want to be loved back. I'm tired of being a solo wolf without this pack. A trapdoor, the trapdoor of the machine drops. It's like a silver cylindrical interior of a washing machine. I slide in and the door shuts. And now I'm shrouded, blackout. And before it starts to spin, something goes wrong. Instead of everything going to dust, something hijacks my mind. The scientists are too late to notice and try to stop. My mind's eye explodes and I see a galloping ocean, a meadow of textured sand, a hawthorn tree the size of a cosmos, strips of cloths dangling from the branches. It sits at the base of the trunk, a giant with two hounds, growling and talking. It has been waiting. The scientists try to wake me. I try to wake until I embrace it. Who I am. I am a pterodactyl cutting through the skies. Thank you. I was like, wait a minute, I'm the MC. I was walking off and going, drop mic, and I was like, hang on. Not bad, Phil, not bad. Sorry. Thank you so much, everyone, for a fabulous, fabulous night of talent and enriching words. We're a beautiful family. We're a beautiful wolf pack here. Big round of applause to Paul. Applause for Paul and Massimo. Wonderful, wonderful guests.